Welcome back to another episode of the Gene Smith Podcast presented by Incova Insurance, where we sit down each week to speak with the Ohio State Senior Vice President and Wolf Foundation Endowed Athletics Director to talk about the current state of OSU athletics. My name is Ben Waite, and I am joined, as always, by Mr. Gene Smith. Gene, first and foremost, how are we doing today?
Doing great, Ben. Thank you for doing this again, and really good to chat with you.
Absolutely. It's always my pleasure. Gene, we are in the heart of our competitive schedule right now. We've got, feels like 30 different teams playing at any given moment. But can you tell the listeners a little bit about what's going on campus?
Yeah, I mean, this is for us, you're right. This is that transition time. You know, we have our sports going on, which are doing excellently, really proud of all of them. And but then we're starting up our winter sports. They're moving into the competition and heavy practice. So we're kind of in that window of time where everyone is busy, but excited. Our students on campus, we just finished midterms this past week. So they're probably catching their breaths after that intense moment in time and beginning to enjoy a true fall where the leaves are beginning to change and the oval and campus is as beautiful as our community. And it's just that time of year where everyone can catch their breath a little bit and then get ready for the holidays that are ahead of us. But really exciting times on campus and really, really proud of our teams that are doing well now.
It's fantastic. Speaking of the holidays, I want to wish your lovely wife a belated Canadian Thanksgiving. I know you guys probably celebrated this week.
Oh, yeah, that was a big one for us. You know, it was nice. We have 27 student athletes who are Canadians, and we sent out a big congratulations and holiday wishes to them yesterday morning. And usually my wife and I host a Canadian dinner on Sunday or Monday night. We weren't able to do that this year. It just didn't work out, but for our student athletes. And so we have a number of people in the athletic department who are Canadians as well. So we had that at the top of our weekly email yesterday. And so it was a great day for all of our Canadian brethren.
If you ask me, yeah, you can never have too many Thanksgivings in my opinion.
Never enough turkey.
Exactly.
But that always begs the question, is it a bird or is it a turkey?
Oh, we always called it a turkey. I guess that's the next heated debate for our staff meeting. But
on the hot dog, is it a hot dog or is it a sandwich?
Never ending. But Gene, at our most recent home football game, we took some time to celebrate 100 years of Ohio Stadium, noting that this is the 100th anniversary of Ohio Stadium. Today, we'll continue that celebration with two of the people who now know the most about that historic facility. Our first guest is the university archivist and head of archives at The Ohio State University. As head of archives, she manages the university archives, the Bird, Polar, and Climate Research Center archival program, and the Ohio Congressional Archives. To prepare for this year's celebration, she has helped collect hundreds of documents and photographs detailing the planning, construction, and history of Ohio Stadium. Welcome, Tamar Chute.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. And our second guest is in his 28th year in the sports information and athletic communication profession, his 19th here at Ohio State, and his 12th as the core media relations contact for the Ohio State football program. Recently, he has helped amass decades worth of data and statistics to help frame the magnitude and impact of Ohio Stadium. So thank you for joining us, Jerry Emig.
Thank you, Ben, for having me, and nice to see you Tamar. Good morning, and good morning, Gene.
Good morning, Jerry. Good morning, Tamar. Glad you're here.
Tamar, can you tell us a little bit about your background and what initially brought you here to Ohio State?
Sure. So I have a master's in library science, concentrating in archives. And I worked as a graduate student in the university archives at the University of Maryland. I loved it. It was a combination of sort of everything that I hoped for, documenting student life and athletics. We even sang the fight song before the football game every week. which at Maryland is a little bit different, obviously, than here at Ohio State. But I think when I was looking for a position, I really wanted something in a university archives. I will admit, I applied to anything that looked like an archives, but I was so excited to get here. So I started here as assistant archivist in 1998 and became university archivist in 2011. And I think the best thing is, yes, we document the history of the university. So it's everything. It's in, from the president's office, student organizations, athletics, all sorts of formats, film and photographs and documents and electronic records now. So it's that whole combination that to me is exciting about the university archives here.
Tamar, how did your involvement with the 100-year celebration begin?
So I actually did a small exhibit on the history of Ohio Stadium in 2002. And at that time, let's see, we were 80, right? And so I thought, well, it'll come up eventually if I'm still here. So about 5 years ago, I realized, oh, guess what? The stadium is going to be 100 pretty soon. And so we started thinking about, okay, what could that look like? What would that be? And decided, of course, we had to do a big exhibit in Thompson Library to celebrate. And also then started thinking about what else, you know, what other programming can we include? So that kind of started. I know it seems 5 years ago, you know, you were already looking ahead, but it takes that long when you want to pull together something as big as 100 years of Ohio Stadium.
Absolutely. Jerry, from your recollection, when was the 100-year anniversary of the stadium first put on your radar?
I'd say it was about 3 years ago when a number of us here in the Department of Athletics first started talking about preparing for this 100th anniversary of Ohio Stadium. So it was about 3 years ago. We didn't get into the meat of the work that we needed to do and the research that we needed to do back then. But it was 3 years ago when we knew that this big year was looming.
What do you remember about those preliminary conversations?
You know, one of the first thing is I think Karen Dertinger and Andy DeVito already had a logo developed, a 1922 to 2022 logo, you know, but at the time I was thinking, you know, our 100th season of football, this 100th season is actually the 21 season because we played, you know, that the minute that stadium was done in 1922, we played that year. So we played the 22 season and then, you know, 10, you know, counting that and plus nine, you know, that would be 1931. And so I was thinking we should celebrate this during the 21 season and not the 22 season, but started learning and, you know, and people kept on resisting my want to celebrate in 2021 by saying, no, Jared, it needs to be 2022. And then it really kind of hit me that our 100th anniversary is of the stadium, not just of football playing in that stadium, but of the stadium is 22 and 23. And we're celebrating not just football games being played there, but commencements and concerts and special events. And then when I started doing research and looking back, you know, our 50th anniversary celebration was in 72. So lo and behold, I was wrong, which, you know, I'll certainly admit the timing was correct that it was this year, the 22-23 season that we're celebrating 100.
And that marked the first time that you've ever been wrong, Jared. So that's,
not at all.
Gene, why do you feel that this celebration is so significant?
Well, you know, the stadium means so many different things to so many different people, but it's basically a community. When you think about the 100,000 plus people that come to there for a football game, or the 60,000 plus people who come there for a concert, or all the people who come there for a special event or a tour. It's a place of community. It's where people come together for different reasons, and they socialize. When you come to the stadium, you may buy something from a merchandise area, or you may buy concessions or things of that nature, but you truly never walk out with some quantifiable takeaway item like you do at Big Lots. It's you come there with an emotion. You come there to have a passion fulfilled. And that happens in a variety of different ways. And your emotions go all over the board based upon the reason that you're there. So I think it's just besides being, an iconic facility, it's a venue that allows people to come together in a different way. And it's really enjoyable when you think about it from that, at least for me, when I think about it from that perspective.
Gene, what do you recall about the initial proposal that was put in front of you for this celebration?
Well, for me, it was kind of stop and start, listening to Jerry, talk about, for the first time in his life, where he was wrong to move from 21 to 22. And I do remember those conversations. And actually, I was glad it was 22, the verification of that, because we have 8 home games. And it gives us an opportunity in a unique way to celebrate and have a variety of ways to celebrate. And I can't thank Tamar and her team enough. We had a donor event one night where in the shoe where we had a number of items from the archives that people just hadn't seen, and our donors were able to engage with those items and have a little reception, and our president came and shared some comments, and that was a social event, sense of community again. And so, and there's been a number of different things that have emerged, but the 8 home games gives us a little longer platform. Didn't plan for 5 in a row, which made it a unique opportunity for us. But that was kind of one of the things that I thought about was, God, we really have some true opportunities. Homecoming was really special in that celebration. And so no, it was just really refreshing to have these mini games so where we can do it.
Mar, what can you tell us about how Ohio State football games looked before the construction of Ohio Stadium?
I think, when I was looking at some of the background of the history of Ohio Stadium, right, that idea of what did we do before? I think most people know that Ohio Field was at the corner of Woodruff and High Street. It's kind of where the ARPS parking garage is now. They've done some great landscaping, so you can kind of get a sense of where the field was at the time. But that was dedicated in 1908. What surprised me is that they started using it, though, a number of years earlier. So they started using it in 1898. So I don't know why it took us that long to christen it as Ohio Field, but it did, in all good. We had to plan a party, apparently. It took us a while. But I think that the photographs of the field, it's so small when you think about Ohio Stadium, right? And it seems very quaint. We have pictures of students that climbed the trees that were outside of the stadium so they could look over and see what was going on. I think this idea of how do we accommodate so many people that want to participate in, like Gene said, not just football, but all the other activities that happen in Ohio Stadium, really comes from the fact that Ohio Field was so small and that people did have to climb trees to see inside. But also an idea of thinking about the university broadly. They didn't put the stadium way out, right? It's really the heart of campus. It's not on the oval, but it's pretty darn close. You can't go onto campus and not see the stadium, not to be a part of it. Even if you never walk through the gates, you see it. It's a part of Ohio State. And so I think the way that Ohio Field was constructed and its location really helped the designers as they were thinking about where to put Ohio Stadium, envision it as it is today, envision it as a multi-purpose stadium with the track, with, the idea that down the road it would be used for all these other things. And I think that's sort of the legacy of Ohio Field it's not there anymore, but it continues. It sort of morphs itself into Ohio Stadium because of the experiences that happen there.
Jerry, what was the turning point from that took us from Ohio Field to the preparations for the stadium? What made that new stadium necessary?
Yeah, I hope you can hear me okay. My phone is ringing and I can't figure out how to turn it off. But there were actually a number of things that could be considered turning points. You know, for starters, there was great interest in the sport of football, you know, in this state from the very beginning. You know, who knows why, but people enjoyed watching this sport of football, guys tackling guys. And that's, you know, as you know, as you can see in our pictures of Ohio Field, you know, that's very evident that we had large crowds, you know, even at that smaller field, way back at the turn of the, I believe that would have been the 20th century. Also, we joined the Big Ten Conference in 1913. Back then it was called the Western Conference. It became the Big Ten Conference. But the fact that we had a structure of a conference and of teams that we would be playing was very important. And then in 1916, just this dazzling player by the name of Charles Chick Harley enrolled at Ohio State and was on the team. And his play and his athletic prowess absolutely wowed our crowds. Chick and the Buckeyes won their first Big Ten titles, consecutively, actually, in 1916 and 1917. They were second in 1919. And when he was playing, Ohio State was 21-1-1 during those 3 years. Fans packed Ohio Field to watch him play, and they were rarely disappointed, again, going 21-1-1. Harley was so good that he was our first All-American. He was our first three-time All-American, and the first Ohio State Buckeye to be enshrined into the College Football Hall of Fame. So it was his play that drew such large crowds, and this really amplified the inadequacy of Ohio Field in terms of its size. And I'll add one other thing as a turning point. The dedication of Ohio State fans throughout this state of Ohio was absolutely critical to this stadium getting built. There was an aggressive fundraising campaign that at the time had hoped to raise the exorbitant amount of money of $600,000 for the stadium's construction. It was ridiculed in editorials and in comics in the local papers because of that amount of money. But actually, in a few short months, more than $900,000 was raised from this fundraising campaign. And that really set the table for this stadium to become a reality.
That's amazing. Gene, what do you think it says about the enduring passion that Ohio State football fans have that the construction for the stadium was privately funded?
I think it contributes to the passion that exists throughout the state. You know, Buckeye Stadium is not owned by Columbus or The Ohio State University or Central Ohio. It's owned by the state. And that original investment is indicative of that. You know, you can go to any county or go to any small town and you can find a story about their passion for Ohio State. It's why, you know, OH goes deep, not throughout the state. And so it's, you know, when you think about it, it's really an opportunity for us who have this opportunity to be stewards of the stadium and tomorrow with the responsibility of its history and embracing that. And so, it says a lot about why we're able to bring hundreds and thousands of people through that venue. And they drive for distances to come to our games or concerts or whatever. So it speaks volumes.
Tamar, what can you tell us about those early phases of the stadium's development?
But I think, yeah, Jerry pointed out the fundraising campaign. One of the things that surprises me about the campaign, if you look at the sort of canvasser literature, I think it only says football one time. Because they wanted to make sure, and this is sort of me reading into the documentation, but the idea was they didn't want someone to say, well, I don't care about football, so I don't want to donate, right? The idea was, let's get people to think about it in broad terms. I think that was really visionary, right? So how do you get people who are not Ohio State grads, who may or may not care about football, how do you get them to see the importance of this facility? And so it talks a lot about the youth of the university. How do we, you know, prepare them for the future, physical fitness? They didn't call it mental health, but this idea of activities and all these other things that were going to take place in the stadium that do take place in the stadium, right? So again, that visionary idea. And they also used the term a magnet. It was going to be a magnet for the university, for the city and the state, and drawing people into the university and the city of Columbus. And so those two things to me are really impressive, the way that they conceptualize the campaign with a parade downtown, not just athletes participating, but all the students participating, men and women, showing that this was a big deal for everybody that was involved, you know, making it broadly appealing, I think was really an innovative and cool way to draw attention to the project.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, Gene. And Tamara, that the fact that you brought up that this was going to be a magnet for people, and I wonder if that was even thought about, or if they knew what the design was going to be, because the design, I mean, it's a horseshoe yet, but it's also a magnet, and you know what and that's exactly what it does. It draws people to it, which is really incredible. Yeah.
I had somebody, I was in the gallery for the exhibit a couple of weeks ago, and someone had seen that magnet, and they said, well, why didn't they call it a magnet instead of a horseshoe? I was like, I don't know.
It's a question for, we'll have to look into Howard Dwight Smith's planning and see. Mm-hmm. Jerry, how did the stadium compare to other college football venues, or even just other venues around the country when it was constructed?
Well, the design was similar to Harvard Stadium back in the day, which also was a horseshoe shaped structure, and this design, you know, outside of Ohio State and Harvard was certainly unique from most other stadiums, which you know, at many of them at the time were bowl stadiums. Ohio Stadium featured the added uniqueness of the double deck, or the second deck that hung over the main stands. Harvard Stadium did not have that. The fact that capacity was over 66,000 back then, again, something else that was, you know, publicly ridiculed at the time, again, until Ohio State started packing crowds in, you know, the size was, you know, enormous for this time or this time period. And I think for the longest time, they never even really gave an official when the stadium was being, when the fundraising campaign was ongoing, and even when the stadium was being built, nobody really knew for sure exactly how big it was going to be in terms of capacity. But you know, that quickly was tamped down when we had 25,000 fans for our inaugural game against Ohio Wesleyan on October 7th, you know, and then, you know, when 72,000 or more filled Ohio Stadium during the dedication game versus Michigan later that month, you know, the visionaries behind it were, you know, just proved so right once again. Right now, Ohio Stadium's not the oldest stadium. We're 100, but there's 10 other football bowl subdivision stadiums that are older. But these are schools, again, blue bloods like Ohio State, Tennessee, Washington, Georgia Tech, Wisconsin, all have, they don't have an iconic horseshoe stadium, but they do have an older stadium.
Gene, how do you feel the scale and ambition, frankly, of this endeavor set the tone for our athletic department moving forward?
Well, it's kind of aligns with, you know, our vision for being comprehensive. You know, having 36 sports, 1,000 athletes, the largest in the country, along with Stanford, they're just have the same number of sports, but no one else is in that neighborhood. You know, just making sure that we, you know, provide opportunities. You know, the SHU provides opportunities. It goes back to really what Tamar was talking about relative to the vision of the people who put the campaign together. It provides opportunities. You know, when forgot what year it was when we decided to end races in the SHU. You know, the four miler and others, we, you know, it's kind of like, what are you doing? Well, that's why it's there. And so you when you think of it in that way, you know, you want to make sure that it is a magnet. You want to make sure that the capacity of it is always taken into consideration. Who knew we have a MLS soccer game in there? And pack it up, you know, that we would put sod on top of the turf. For me, it was just phenomenal. And so the structure, the grandiose opportunity that we have with it is endless. I mean, the things that we could do there.
Tamar, knowing that you've been looking over these materials for the last 5 years, what can you tell us about the stadium's development that may surprise people?
I think building off of what Gene just said is the integration of the stadium with the students. If we think about the purpose, right, that it had the track, that we've had a lot of other sports in the SHU over its history, because that was the field, right? Soccer and lacrosse and track and field, of course. And so there's all that aspects, but then the stadium dorm. So a lot of people have commented, I've seen stories or they've commented to me personally that they lived in the stadium dorm. But looking back at why we created the stadium dorm during the Great Depression and seeing how vital it was for students to remain in school, and that the university took the initiative to create what they called the stadium scholarship dorms. And we have letters from parents to the president at the university, who's George Reitmeier at the time, thanking him for providing this opportunity for their, it was for men, for their student who would have not been able to stay in school. And this idea of, how does the university use a building like the stadium to provide access and affordability, which we continue to, you know, stress today and the importance of that, and use it to benefit these students in the 30s, I think just shows the care that we take of integrating that building into all different aspects of student life for our athletes, but for our all the students that have abilities to do so many different things. Sort of along those lines, there was a stadium theater underneath the stands where students would put on Broadway shows, and they would have to build the stage and then take it down and build it again and take it down. I think at some point they're like, okay, this is ridiculous, we gotta stop it. But this idea again, like, what are the other ways we can use this building and this facility and integrate it? And of course, commencement. You know, since 1928, we've held spring commencement, except for during the renovation. There were 2 years on the Oval. I don't want somebody to say, wait, what about? But in general, right, that's an amazing opportunity for people to be a part of the history of the horseshoe on an individual level, but also the families and friends that come to see their students, you know, walk across the field and get their diploma. And that's an incredible accomplishment. And it just integrates the building into so many aspects of our students' lives, I think is really important.
And to Tamar's point, you know, when we had COVID years and the classes that did not have the opportunity to have their commencement in the stadium, when we did the survey to see if they would come back for commencement, and what elements would be important to them. The number one was the host commencement in the shoe. You know, the alternative idea of having it in the shot or some other locations was unacceptable. It had to be in the shoe because that's the memory they wanted. It's a great comment.
Absolutely. And Gene, I know being a man that appreciates theater and the culture, we'll start looking into maybe getting some Broadway shows back in the stadium.
Yeah, don't tip me now, Ben. You know me now. I'll think out of that box. We'll be calling Zen and Breeden and all our other guys that work with the promoters to come up with some idea that would be crazy.
Gary, after looking through all the materials that you have over the past 100 years, what do you know about Ohio Stadium now that maybe you didn't know a few years ago?
Yeah, and I want to echo the community and the engagement with not only students but our fans and the citizens of Ohio that stadium. The reactions that it causes. My son graduated and walked through in Ohio Stadium this past spring. And I mean, that is a magical, profound, wonderful opportunity for the students to be able to walk into that facility, but also, you know, the parents and family and friends who are there watching it. It's wonderful. I mean, how many other schools around the country even have commencement in a stadium like that? And not only a commencement where you're actually getting your degrees, it's just an absolutely wonderful resource and a wonderful opportunity that we give to our students. And it's just really magical. I was thinking, me of all people, I'm in that stadium for every home game and have been for 19 years. When I saw that there'd be 12,000 graduates, I'm telling my wife, we don't have to get there early. There's only 12,000 graduates. And it wasn't until I got onto campus and realized I have to park at the Fawcett Center where I work because I can't get anywhere closer. And that's when it hit me that, well, all 12,000 of these graduates are going to have 10 people here each. And so we had bad seats for my son's graduation, but that's okay. But what do I know about Ohio Stadium that I didn't before? Number one, it's the fifth largest stadium in the world. I didn't realize that at the time, but there's a stadium in Pyongyang, North Korea, one in, I want to say it's in Ahmedabad, India. There's a stadium to our north. There's a stadium to our east, and then you've got Ohio Stadium with its 102,780 capacity. So the fifth largest stadium in the world. My research, you know, caused me to realize that, hey, our 600th game officially in it will be on November 26th of this year, just 2 days after Thanksgiving. So that's going to be very interesting. And then finally, you know, we all know that this stadium is affectionately known as the house that Harley built. I didn't realize it until just recently, but Harley's nickname of Chick, it actually comes from the, and I know Tamara probably knows this amongst the millions of things she knows about the stadium, but it actually came from the city where Chick Harley was born, Chicago. So Chick is just a truncated form of the word Chicago. Never knew it, but now I do.
Now see, Jerry, I did not know that.
Yeah, so he moved there. His family moved to Columbus. He was born in Chicago, and they moved to Columbus when he was 12 and then graduated from Columbus East High School. But yeah, Chick is actually short for Chicago.
I didn't know that either, and my dog's named after him. So that's good to know.
Your dog has a little Chicago in your dog. Well,
more than you know, Gene. So, Gene, the stadium has changed many times over the decades, but what's fascinating to me is that the bones have always remained the same over the past 100 years. Keeping that in mind, what do you think the future holds for Ohio Stadium?
Well, you know, I think the last big piece of the puzzle that we put in place when we increased the student section to 17,500 at the close end of the shoe was an important piece. You know, I think from there we'll have different modifications to enhance the experience for the sense of community. We'll, you know, at some point the scoreboard will change and the sound system will be different, and you know, you'll probably have some more premium seat areas like we have with the Lowe's on the northwest corner of the stadium. You'll have a few of those here and there. But the most important piece, Ben, is the upkeep. You know, people tend to forget it's a cement structure. And so it's exposed to the elements year round. So making sure that we take care of that concrete structure is critical, which is why we spend annually, you know, somewhere south of $1 million a year just on cement care and maintenance. And so I think that that's the most important thing. I do not see any other major structural changes. You know, we have 92 suites and, you know, but someone else will, you know, have a vision somewhere down the road that might be a little different. You look at what Notre Dame would do with their stadium. You know, it may get to the point where the university doesn't need building space and they have to build around the stadium if necessary. But you know, I think in the near future, I think we're fine. We just got to make sure we take care of it the right way. And I want to go back to something, you know, you asked Tamar earlier about the changes over time. And it was funny, Tamar, when I look at those pictures, you know, I look at the people in the stands and the clothes that changed over time, right? You know, back in the day, they wore suits and ties and it actually smoked. I remember with Rick Van Bremmer a couple of years ago, we were talking about this. We were looking at, you know, the merchandise, you know, what we would do with the logo that everybody that came up with Jerry, with Andy and the team. But I was just amazed when you look at, we didn't have face painters, you know, back in the day. It's just funny when you look at all those different styles of how people came to the game. It's really so much different today. It's amazing.
There was no scarleting out the shoe.
Yeah, you don't have that.
You know,
I'm sure we could find a raccoon coat somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. I should have looked for that.
What I'd like, I read an article. I'm not sure if they actually did this or not, but there's an article where an actual gift that we were giving away at the stadium was a replica of the stadium ashtray for the smokers.
I'm sure.
Gary, we actually have one of those in the exhibit. We have one of the ashtrays. But because we lost the dedication game, they didn't sell. And so the ashtrays didn't know what to do.
So that was for the dedication game.
Yeah. Wow. And then it became, it's sort of funny because it goes back to this idea of the stadium and students. The model for it became a project in one of the welding classes, you know, one of the manufacturing classes. So they used the form and stuff. So you've got several over time. And then in the 50th anniversary, they tried to get rid of all these that didn't sell.
I'm sure there was a bunch of people in their offices that have them. They're unused.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, I wanted to wrap up by asking each of you what your favorite memory in Ohio Stadium is and why that stands out to you. And Tamar, I wanted to start with you.
So I think, can I have two?
Sure.
Okay. So the one is I teach a history of the university class, spring semester. And most of these are graduating seniors. They take it as an elective. And occasionally we've had the opportunity to take them up to the Huntington Club in the suite. And to watch their faces, these are graduating seniors, to watch their faces as they come up and they look out on the stadium from up there. And you can see the memories going through their faces, right? Of all the different times they've been there with their friends and they see graduation just approaching. And so that to me is just an amazing memory, is just watching those students process their time both at Ohio State and in the stadium as they sit there and watch it from above. That to me is just, it's always something that sticks with me as I think about the stadium. And then the second one is just, I have two daughters, and the first time we took them, I can't remember how old they were, old enough that they remember it. And we took them to a game and we were way up. But just watching their whole eyes like brighten, right? As they walk through and they see the pageantry and they see the band and they see the cheerleaders and they see the game, that whole introducing it to sort of that next generation of the whole experience of being a part of Buckeye Nation, being a part of the stadium, that's another piece to me that just is sort of at the top of the things that I think of when I think of Ohio Stadium.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jerry, what about you?
I've been at a lot of great games there, fun games. But I guess the favorite memory would be a memory that just makes me sick to my stomach. It's the 2016 game when it took us, you know, double overtime to beat that team up north. JT Barrett, you know, made the fourth down first down to extend that drive. And but actually the play right before that was Curtis Samuel just running about 40 yards to gain 9 to give us a fourth and one at, you know, whatever it was, the Michigan 15 yard line. JT got the first down, as we all saw, you know, he made that first down and then Curtis scored on the very next play. And wonderful experience, wonderful win, and I'll take that any day.
Absolutely. Gene, what about you?
I'm like Tamar, I got so many, but you know, I have to say it was a moment that was personal. You know, I came in 05 and we changed out the field. We had the 1-2 game 2006 against the team up north, and one of our great iconic former players, Bill Willis, had lost his Hall of Fame ring. And, you know, Bill, you know, such an icon. You know, he was one of two African-Americans who played professional football. Actually, I think it was just before Jackie Robinson began to play. He played alongside Marion Motley. You know, as an African-American, he meant so much to me. And we were able to reproduce his Hall of Fame ring and bring him down on the field at halftime with his family, who I had met, gotten to know, and give him that ring. And, you know, the tears that he was in a wheelchair at that time.
Yeah.
It was moving for me. It meant a lot to me. And when, you know, I can still hear the crowd, you know, stand and cheer that moment. He was up on the video board, and that says a lot about Buckeye Nation. You know, it's like we had just stopped the team up north on 4th and 1, and it was deafening. And that says a lot about the passion that can be in that venue, that sense of community. So for me, that one still means a lot. It's, you know, it's right up, that picture's right in my office, right next to my desk. And it was a special moment in time for me. The other piece of it, why it was so special, because he passed away in 2007, you know, a few months later. So to give him that moment and have Buckeye Nation appreciate it and appreciate him that way, you know, that's what that venue does. You know, I'm sure there's so many other, for everybody, there's so many moments like that, but that's what that venue does. You can't recreate that, you know, like out in the, you know, the middle of a field somewhere. You know, it's that community that can rally around a moment like that. That's really cool.
Absolutely. Well, that does it for another episode of the Gene Smith Podcast presented by Encova Insurance. I want to thank Tamar and Jerry so much for joining us. Really appreciate all the work that you guys have done to help celebrate and commemorate this monumental occasion for Ohio Stadium. And really appreciate you guys taking the time to talk through it today.
Thank you.
Thanks for including us.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks, Tamar. Appreciate you. Take care.
We really appreciate everyone who has listened and subscribed thus far. Be sure to leave us a review wherever you find your podcasts. Until next time, for Gene Smith and everyone here at Ohio State Athletics, I am Ben Waite. Be well and go Bucks.
Go Bucks.